Good morning. Welcome to the edition of the Richard Urban Show. We bring you news and views from the patient principal point of view. We're very happy to have as a guest today Libby Emmons. She's the editor of the Post Millennial and Human Events. So please introduce yourself, Libby.
Hi, I am Libby Emmons, and as you said, I'm the editor in chief of the Post Millennial and Human Events. Both of those outlets you can find online at thepostmillennial.com and humanevents.com. And yeah, we do breaking news and culture, international events, and we've been really covering this latest stuff in Minnesota. So if viewers want to check that out, you'll find an awful lot of wild stuff going on our pages from that whole situation.
Yeah, I get at least one of your newsletters, Post Millennial, and to my inbox, and I do, often read it. So yeah, everyone should check it out. Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Well, today we especially wanted to discuss about sexual ethics, and especially absolute sexual ethics is the core of civil society, and its breakdown causes a breakdown of society. So along that line, I thought I'd share a few slides that, I prepared that, give some stimulating topics or points for discussion. So I'm going to do that now, and then we'll roll with the discussion.
Okay, great.
Okay, so this is the basic premise that I've been putting forward as the, co-founder of my wife of Urban Life Training. That's our education program. To break the generational cycle of outside of wedlock birth, we need a revolution of abstinence-centered education. Parents should present the expectation of sexual abstinence for marriage to their children, regardless of whether or not they abstain themselves. They should think about what is best for their children's future and speak honestly about their own situation. School and community-based programs such as Urban Life Training can back up parents in making this revolution. In one generation, this can break the cycle of outside wedlock births and all the related personal and societal consequences. So here in West Virginia, actually 47% of children in West Virginia are born outside of marriage. And you see how it's gone up from like 5 to 10% up till like 1975 to almost 50% or about 50% now. Wow. So teaching sexual abstinence for marriage is integrally related to create a safe and healthy environment for our children. So in ninth grade, this is nationwide, but similar in each state. 2 in 10 students have had sexual intercourse. That's the ninth graders. But the 12th graders, it's 6 in 10. So as a parent or I'm a grandparent, that's kind of concerning. That's really concerning in my opinion. Additionally, more than 1 in 10 students in high school have experienced sexual dating violence. What kind of sexual health and racial education are students getting in high school? So there's that. Our mission is to raise youth leaders to develop good character and to model and teach about the benefits of sexual abstinence in preparation for marriage and successful family formation. And we provide directive abstinence-centered health education through our community network of trained parents, community leaders. And the Urban Life Training chapters carry out the Urban Life Training mission in their local areas. Okay. And this is a reading from a speech. So we do have, faith-based, and our school program is secular. But I think it's good to inform ourselves, with documents like this. So this is from a speech called Family, Rooted in Absolute Sexual Ethics, which is the model of For God's Absolute Peace and Ideal in the Global Kingdom. And that's by Reverend Sun Myung-Moon. So respected leaders from around the world, what do you think God's ultimate purpose for creating human beings is? God's purpose is experience joy through relating with ideal families filled with true love. And what does an ideal family look like? When God first created human beings, he made Adam representing all men and Eve representing all women with the intention they become owners of true love. Then what was the quickest way for them to cultivate a character of true love? Simply put, it was to secure a parent-child relationship with God. Thereby, they could live in attendance of God as their father and form a model family embodying God's ideal of peace. They would have followed the path of living as one family with God, experiencing joy eternally. So God created Adam and Eve and installed them as the first ancestors of humankind to form the model family and establish the ideal of peace. He committed himself completely raising them as a son and daughter who are to be encapsulations of the entire cosmos, mediators between spiritual and physical worlds, and lords of creation, and who would be joined with him through true love, true life, and true lineage. Ladies and gentlemen, it was necessary for Adam and Eve to establish a model ideal family of peace. God, the absolute being, created human beings as children in order to instill in them absolute values on the basis of absolute standard. Thus, human beings must follow the way of that absolute standard in keeping with the demands of the heavenly path. This means we must follow our destined life course in order to attend God, the absolute being, as our parent. In other words, for people to perfect themselves in resemblance of God and obtain the stature of people of character who can be called sons and daughters of the absolute being, they must follow the path based on the absolute standard God has determined. The essence of this path is the standard of absolute sexual purity. The first stage is to maintain absolute sexual purity prior to getting married. After we're born, we go through a process of growth. We pass through infancy and childhood in a very safe and secure environment, embraced in our parents' love and protection. We then enter a time of adolescence, which signals the start of a new and dynamic life as we forge relationships in a totally new level with those around us, as well as with all things of creation. This is a moment when we begin to travel the path to becoming an absolute human being, internally through perfection of our character, and externally by reaching adulthood. Yet at this time, there's an absolute requirement that people must fulfill no matter who they are. This is a requirement of maintaining their purity, which is absolute sexual morality for human beings. God gave it to his children as their destined responsibility and duty to be carried out in order to fulfill the ideal of creation. This heavenly path is thus the way toward perfecting the model of absoluteness and conjugal love. So this is this, what is known as the success formula. And you probably have seen this. I think it's from the Brookings Institute. Graduate from high school, get a full-time job, wait until 21 and marry before having children. So if you follow all these rules, you have a 2% chance of living in poverty. If you don't follow any of them, it's a 74% chance. So that's quite striking. Although I don't think that every school or place of education is, or even all parents are emphasizing that. But that's the a formula for success. And, well, definitely graduating, definitely getting a job. And this is a really big one, waiting until you're married to have children. So I see a two-tiered solution to, like, our societal collapse, like we were talking about. First, teach sexual abstinence before marriage and fidelity within marriage to our children. We've been doing that. We've worked with, like, over 3,000 youth have been educated in, like, 350 in clubs. Create a movement of marriage as God-centered. And we have a new site called unionstation.love as a matching site where singles who practice sexual abstinence before marriage or have returned to sexual abstinence before marriage can find a marriage partner. So it's intentional. And that's a project of Urban Life Training. So this is our screenshot of our site. Find your term match, unionstation.love. Yeah, and I think, let's see if I have any more slides. Well, I think that's enough for now because we really want to discuss with you, Libby, and you're working, I know, with human events, and that's really cool because I know you also deal with a lot of cultural issues, right, as well as political issues. So I'll stop sharing this. But I think that gives plenty of food for thought. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. The one thing that I think is really key to note is that to engender any of these results, people need to have a religious foundation. And that is, I think, the key thing that is lacking. I think if you put, because what's the thing to do in marriage, right? I mean, you're supposed to put God and God's love at the center of your marriage. That's something that people who've been married for, you know, 60 years, that's what they talk about. They talk about how they put God at the center of their marriage. But we have a culture now where God has been pretty much ejected from our culture. We have a situation where progressive ideologies have created their own religion, essentially an oppressor victim mentality that is definitely not founded in any of the Christian morality. To solve any of these problems, we need to have a Christian morality that is the basis of our society. And that's something that is missing, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Yeah, totally. And there's a good parallel between, I think, Well, what do you think? Let's put it as a question. Like abstinence-centered education and Christian morality. I mean, sometimes there's probably a disconnect because even within churches, there's a lot of divorce and things like that. But nonetheless, I think that's kind of a natural parallel, like the reading was saying, of a purpose-centered life. Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I had a teacher in high school, Peter Renka, who was my English teacher and also our philosophy teacher in an elective. And he would often talk about leading an examined life. And he wasn't the first teacher I'd had who talked about that. I had a Western Civ teacher in the Catholic school I went to in Massachusetts back when Western civilization was actually a course that was taught, right? It wasn't like world cultures. It was like, no, we're focusing on Western civilization. And she talked about leading an examined life. And I think that this is also something that is no longer in vogue, but it certainly was for the, intellectuals and people who liked to read of my generation. The idea was that as you go through your life, you think about what kind of life you want to lead. You think about questions like, what is the right thing to do? Is there a way to determine what the right thing to do is in any given situation? How much do circumstances play a role in whether or not, for example, stealing a loaf of bread is wrong, to go back to the Les Miserables thing, So these are questions that we were encouraged to address just as part of our daily life. And I don't think that that's what we have going on in education now. I think in a lot of ways we've really dumbed down our education. And in terms of sexual health, I know that just in my lifetime, when I was a student, we went from a situation where they would teach, don't have sex before marriage, to this idea that all kids are going to do it anyway, so teach them the stuff that comes after. And that also open the door, that opened the door to like talking about STDs and all the rest of it, but I also opened the door to moralizing abortion as something that is a moral good. And the only way that you can frame abortion as a moral good is to say that you are the most important being in the universe, and that what you want at any given moment, your desires are the most important thing. And of course, if you're leading an examined life, you know that that's totally false, right? You know that that's not reasonable. And so I think we're dealing with a lot of really big problems, big cultural problems. And we're also dealing with how to talk about those problems. We have, children being born out of wedlock is not an ideal situation for children. Abortion, obviously, is the opposite of an ideal situation, either for children or mothers or fathers. I've certainly had friends over the years, male friends, who have confided in me not only the grief that they had over their child being aborted, but the feeling that they had that they were not allowed to grieve because, it's the woman's choice and blah, blah, blah. So we have, that issue. We have the issue of people not raising their children in the church. The church that I go to is a Catholic church, and every Sunday it's full, and there's kids crying, and I'm like, praise Jesus that there are children in this church. My cousin told me she came to the church. My son was confirmed, and she came for, the confirmation ceremony.
Oh, nice.
And she was like, well, she was his godmother too, so it was important. But she was like, if it ain't, if a church ain't crying, it's dying. And I was like, that is true. But so we have those issues, and a lot of it, I think, has to do with a godlessness that also tells people they don't need to have children. They don't need to have relationships. They don't need to start families. That these things are all beneath the selfish pursuits of career and lifestyle and, desire. So, yeah.
Well, you've unpacked a lot of things there. I mean, one thing I often wondered, I am pro-life and I don't believe in abortion, but I often wondered and thought, wouldn't it even be better in the pro-life movement to take a step back and focus more on abstinence? Now, I have talked to, like, I was running a program in DC for many years to, like, crisis pregnancy centers, and we worked a little bit with one of them, and they did a little bit, tiny bit of education, but there's not much, meaning the kind of thing we do, but just a little bit. There doesn't seem to be a big emphasis on that. Wouldn't stepping back and emphasizing abstinence education more and the kind of thing I'm saying, breaking generational cycles, wouldn't that be a logical embrace for the pro-life movement? I don't see it really. Or do you? Maybe I'm missing something.
What, to see that that would be a logical
step? Yeah, that they're emphasizing it. Like, okay, we have so many abortions. Don't you think probably, I don't know the exact statistic or if there's any data, but that like at least 80% of abortions could be removed or plus if you practice abstinence only, you know, if you weren't having sex outside of marriage, wouldn't that remove most of the abortions?
I don't know. I don't know if it would. And I wonder, while I appreciate and respect your position on abstinence and the religious foundation for saving sex for something within marriage, I wonder that that's a genie we can put back in the bottle without a widespread religious revival movement.
Okay.
You know, I wonder about that. And I think at this point, I mean, I'm also, you know, I'm exceedingly pro-life. And one of the things that I think is so wild is that we are closing in on 1 million abortions per year in this country.
Wow.
As we have a declining population.
So is that abortion? So does that mean abortion is continuing to increase every year?
Abortion has continued to increase even past the Dobbs decision, because after the Dobbs decision, one thing that also happened was, you know, these medical ghouls have come up with abortion pills. So
oh, yeah.
A lot of the abortions are done chemically, which is dangerous for the mother
right.
as well in many
right.
circumstances. But closing in on a million babies a year, that starts to sound like an American genocide.
It does.
You know, it sounds like we're murdering our population. And I think kids are not getting a very clear message at all. They're getting a lot of conflicting messaging. So, you know, you could have religious parents saying, wait until you're married to share this experience with someone that you love and you want to start a family with them. That's a great thing to say in religious families where, you know, kids have a strong faith, you know, and let's face it, it's not easy to have faith when you're a kid. You have your whole life ahead of you. You feel invincible. Unless something terrible happens, it's hard to recognize where you need God in your life if you're not going to church every Sunday, if it's not being discussed. And so I think that I almost think that bigger than pushing any kind of behavioral modification,
okay,
we need to impress upon our fellow Americans that faith matters. And I don't know how to do that either. You know, I don't know how to do that either. I encourage my son to wait until marriage. You know, you also have a situation where our population is declining and we see the younger generations aren't engaging in sex the way that previous generations did. And part of that has to do with their stepping back from real life, from looking at the internet as though that's real life, from diving into virtual reality and just talking on their phones instead of hanging out in person. So on the one hand, you know, we need more people. And I don't know how we get more people.
Well, to me, I mean, as you can see, I'm a little focus a lot on the abstinence piece. Well, I think it could bring a generational revolution. I mean, I should say we have a faith-based program. It's called STAR, Students Teach After Responsibility Interfaith Leadership Training. But our school program, as you may guess, is not faith-based because otherwise the schools, public schools don't like it very much.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, everything that's going on. But in any case, there are a lot of good reasons to abstain. I found, you know, and you can see some of the videos and so on our website, maybe you have already, that students are like warming to this idea. And we worked in D.C. I worked initially at Eastern High School, which is like they've rebuilt it, but It's by RFK Stadium, and a lot of the population comes from East River and so on. Anyways, most of the students didn't live with both parents, or probably 75% about. And they were refreshed, many, to hear the idea, oh, gosh, I should abstain, at least till later. If not, some of them might struggle with marriage because the parents aren't married, people in the community aren't married, but they're still thinking about it and think it's a good idea. And I would say, even on the secular level, that's palatable. But so I think at least that should be the emphasized school education. But even if the school doesn't adopt, so-called, or well, totally abstinence education, which most aren't at the moment, they should at least present it as an option instead of the so-called comprehensive education, which, pushes, like you say, the after effects. Oh, use condoms. And then they kind of make up this idea that that's effective. But as you know, and as with anything else, what do they measure? Oh, that people use a condom. Well, is that really a measure of success? Oh, they use a condom when they had sex. That's a very successful approach. So it's a lot of baloney, really. But yeah,
Yeah,
I think, go ahead.
I wonder how you can teach abstinence without a religious component. And I do think that abstinence should be part of a holistic education in that area, and I think that's important. But I struggle a lot with the idea that there could be morality outside of a religious foundation. I feel like when you look at what the Judeo-Christian religions have done in terms of social advancement, even looking at it from outside a perspective of faith, the Ten Commandments was a massive social advancement. The Beatitudes and Christianity, they were social advancements as well, because they took on this idea of how are you supposed to live? How are you supposed to treat other people? How are you supposed to treat God? How are you supposed to treat yourself? And they put in place an idea of respecting others, but also respecting yourself, treating your body as a gift from God, your life as a gift, And so I wonder how you can, and I'm interested to know, because obviously you guys are doing it. Like, how do you create an abstinence-only program without a religious foundation? Like, where do you draw morality from? And the other thing that I think you mentioned that is so interesting to me is how many kids are growing up in families where the parents had never been married and they live separate. How do you teach kids how to have a foundational marriage when they've never seen it? I think about this in terms of my own life. My parents are divorced. They've each been divorced more than once. They split up when I was 10 months old. I've never known them to be married. My mom didn't get married again until I was like 11 or something. My dad got married again when I was about 6. My grandparents on both sides got divorced, either before I was born or before I was really like aware. I mean, this was in the 70s, they got divorced. So I don't remember ever seeing a, and the marriages that my parents ended up in after each other ended in divorce, So I don't remember ever seeing a functional marriage, Several of my aunts have been divorced. It's like, what even is a marriage? In addition to abstinence, we should be teaching like, this is why marriage is
Well,
awesome,
that's very interesting. So I think a couple points. Let's go back first. Well, two big points I think were the teaching abstinence without the God-centered framework, and then you were talking about marriage, about the example of marriage, like from your parents or lack thereof. Well, yeah. So we're not the. I mean, there's a number of abstinence-centered curricula I've studied. Whether it be Project Reality or others, Worth the Wait, and several I've certified in, but in addition to our own program. But the Point is, yeah, you can. I mean, there's a lot of good. We talk about the physical, intellectual, emotional, social, and mental, and you could add spiritual components of, abstaining. So those are a lot of good things that kind of like parallel the religious. And then for many students or some students, their faith is important. And as you're intimating, for a lot of students, it's probably not, because I remember asking students, sometimes I'd ask them, about that or in the club. So not that many. I mean, some were definitely religious, but not many of them. But it is, there are a lot of good reasons to abstain. But about the God-centered, yeah, I agree that, ultimately you do need a God-centered marriage. So, I mean, in the school environment, but you can teach a lot of things. Like, I mean, that's, and in fact, I could, you can look on our website, and we can talk about that later, but see our materials and stuff since you're interested. But about marriage itself, like on the Union Station concept, so we have a lot of we are ask people if they want to get on our matching site, then they should we're going to have we have several courses and we're developing more. Like one of them is actually our relationship intelligence course, so it's not God-centered, so that's a jumping in point. But the main course is called the Blessing Preparation Course, and then it has like 38 lessons, and it is God-centered, and it does refer to scripture. So I think that is a proper foundation for marriage, and we people to jump on the matching site, or married couples can take it too, to enrich your marriage, should take that. So I mean, I do agree with that, but also it's a very good teaching, obviously, for abstinence. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, aligning with God is the ultimate reason. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, I think that's important. I wonder if we can. I know that after Charlie Kirk was murdered, there was this kind of feeling in the conservative movement that a revival could be underway, and it has definitely seemed to drop by the wayside. And I wonder if that can come back at a what was it? At one of the Turning Point events a few years ago, I was doing a panel about faith in, like, having faith in a liberal city, right? Because I lived in New York City, and I was a weirdo, right? Going to church was a weird thing to do. My friends would go to brunch, and I'd be like, "Oh, I could come after mass," and they'd be like, "What now? What are you talking about?" But there was this young woman who spoke up at this. It was the Young Women's Leadership Forum, and there was this young woman who spoke up, and she said, "Nobody in my generation talks about the soul." And this would have been a Gen Z person, and she said, "No one talks about the soul. Everyone thinks you're weird if you talk about a soul, and if you have some sort of issue, if you're sad or if you're depressed, then people talk about going to see a therapist. They talk about, psychiatric drugs. They don't talk about a soul." So how do we let kids know that God exists in a culture that does everything to tell them that it doesn't, in a culture that tells them their personal desires at any given moment are the pinnacle of happiness, and the pinnacle of what's important? It's so strange that that's where we landed. I mean, when I was in eighth grade, which was the late 80s, I was in my confirmation class with church. And these things were top of mind. These things were very much emphasized. Wait until marriage. Marriage is a good thing. Don't have abortions. Like all of this. And it was all very important, and they talked about it. They also talked about abstinence was a big focus for the people that were trying to tell us not to get AIDS also, because AIDS was just hitting the mainstream media, and that was a big concern then as well. But yeah, I think these questions are so interesting, and they're so important. And you also see in past empires, right? Here we are. We are an American empire. The sun sets on us, you know, we're not like the British were for sure. But like when you look at past empires, you look at Rome and some of the other ones, when you have the complete abandonment of sexual morality, you have the nearing of the end of that empire as well. Because you know, look at like Nero and everybody. The idea that you will cast off that which gives your society cohesion, relationships that are strong between men and women, relationships that are strong between family, you know, within a family, strong communities. When you cast that off and you just throw everyone to the wolves of their own desires, you really have a problem. And we don't look at these stories as much as, I mean, maybe we never did, but we certainly don't look at them very often. And I think of the story of Paolo and Francesca in Dante's Inferno, where you have these two people who had been lovers in life, right? They had had like an affair. And so in hell, what's their torment? Their torment is that they are bound together and basically in a wind chamber. They're cast about on the winds of their own desires because they had no control of themselves on earth, and so they have no control of themselves in the afterlife. You know, that's the consequence of that. And we don't, it's not just, I think it's not just abstinence, right? I mean, abstinence is a form of self-control, and if you don't have self-control and you don't have will, then you're going to have trouble being abstinent about sex, and you're going to have trouble being abstinent about, you know, how many sodas you drink after school. Like you're going to have real problems. And so these character building core things that we have abandoned in our society in favor of the whimsy of desire and the moral perspective of, you know, oppressors are bad and victims are always good, really leaves us rudderless as a society, as a culture, and for individuals as well.
Yeah, I agree. So definitely, like our program and abstinence-centered programs generally are, are character-based. And yeah, I agree, it is a big issue. In fact, one of our like sub-mottos is character, not condoms. I mean,
Right.
character,
That's a
not
good one.
condoms.
Right.
So, definitely, I mean, you're right. Like, there's where's the character building thing? I mean, it's com in some ways it's common sense, but it's true. It's not being emphasized, and we can see the consequences. I mean, also, like you may have seen on my last show, I was pointing out like here in Jefferson County, West Virginia, they have a history of teachers who are sexual predators. And one of the very teachers, I was at a board of education meeting, and they were dealing with the adopting a new health curriculum. So I was talking about how it should not be a comprehensive sex education curriculum, and was giving some quotes from CECAS, there you go, CECAS. And then this teacher got up and said, no, that doesn't work. And that very teacher was convicted now and 35 to 55 years in jail just at that time, or shortly after, when he said abstinence doesn't work, he was having sex with a 17-year-old student. So, I mean,
Oh
how
my
crazy is
goodness.
that? Yes, that happened. That's Willie Belmonte. If you check my last show, I'm talking about the whole issue. And then just recently, you might have seen it, it was in the National File, a teacher at Washington High School. So this is an interesting story. So I've been was recently going around. We just have a new chapter director here in Jefferson County for urban life training, because we have like a decentralized chapter model, Tammy Thompson. But anyway, or Tamara Thompson, I was going around to the high schools and middle schools. So I talked to the principal, and he kind of pretty much blew me off. And he said, oh, we have other nonprofits at our school, and I'll check with them. And I thought, that's kind of weird. You're the principal. What are you going to check with them? Well, it turns out one of the nonprofits, this woman, Staubs is her name, worked for her last name, worked for what is it, communities and schools. I'm not saying that's why she was messed up. Anyway, she was literally filming pornography at the school.
Oh my
Well, like,
goodness,
okay,
at
not porn.
Washington High School?
Yeah, in her room where she was supposed to be counseling at-risk children. Well, okay, I don't know if you call it pornography, but I've seen pictures, so maybe it's the same thing. And
Oh,
so
that's horrifying because also, if she's one of these guidance counselors, this is who they send the kids to all day. You know, they're like,
yeah,
oh,
right, she's in the school. But
you had a
Reed
little
checked.
frustrating thing at lunch. Go to the guidance counselor, you know, just make sure you don't interrupt her filming porn in her office.
Well, yeah, and there's a link to that under the on our website under the what do you say, under my show, last show. But yeah, I mean, so okay, so the schools, the so far the seven there's seven middle and high schools public. Well, one is charter, public and charter. So far, just in our recent travels, none of them wanted our program, by the way, which was is free for them. I mean, we pay for it. That's kind of interesting. But at the same time, a woman's filming, obscene pictures and putting them out from the school, huh? Something's definitely not right there.
People get fired for doing that in Congress.
She was terminated.
Yeah.
But why is it even happening
Why
again
would
and
that
again and
happen?
again?
Yeah.
I mean, common sense says we'll be going to the Board of Education with our, we haven't yet officially approach them. We have that resolution for absence and character education that we suggest Board of Education adopt. But well, I think getting back also to the point of people or children not aspiring for marriage or not seeing it. Yeah, there is a trend of cohabitation, and then you have people like Elon Musk. Like I didn't know much about his background, so I remember, or recently, it was about a year ago maybe, saying, oh yeah, have more children. And I say, oh, he has 13 children, or is it 14? Because one is like he doesn't acknowledge, or and then I said, oh, so I look it up, and he's got like three, or is it four different partners?
Oh,
One of
at
them is,
least. Yeah, at
at least
least.
one of them is married apparently at some point, and or he was, and
He
he has
married the first one.
that
You know,
one.
he married the first one. And then everybody since, it's been like, you know, here and there, and some of the children have been conceived via surrogate. It's really a mess. You also have the head of the guy who runs Telegram, you know, that messaging app. The
Yeah.
guy who runs Pe Telegram, I forget his name, but anyway, he has over 100 children conceived by sperm donation because he donated his sperm. And so
That's crazy.
that's crazy. And then we also have this thing of people not taking responsibility for their reproductive material and people not caring what happens to kids, right? Like,
That's
so
right.
if you are, if let's say you're, you know, you're a gay couple in France, right? You're a gay couple in France. So surrogacy is not legal in France. And I think that gay marriage is not legal in France. So here you're this gay couple in France. You then decide you want to have a child. Well, there's no woman, right? So you're missing half of the necessary
Right.
material to have a child. So then what you do is you buy an egg. You buy eggs from someone, perhaps in Eastern Europe. This happens a lot, right? So they call them cheap white eggs. You buy cheap white eggs from Eastern Europe from some woman there who has had her eggs harvested for whatever sum of money she got at the time. And then an agency sells those eggs without any provenance as to who they come from. So now you have some eggs, you have your sperm, because you're both fellas, you go to the United States where surrogacy is legal and where poor women take this up. And poor women will get contracted by a surrogacy company. They'll get paid maybe $30,000 for the rental of their body. Some of these women are married. So imagine the emasculation of
Wow.
being a man in that marriage where your wife is renting out her body to gestate some motherless baby,
How
right? So
many
this is.
surrogate babies are there in the US, say in a year?
Well, they don't keep track of it. No one's keeping track. literally no one is really keeping track. There are some not-for-profits who are saying like, hey, this isn't awesome, let's not do this. But some states have commercial surrogacy as legal, some states don't. And so it's really, and a lot of states there's no regulation at all, so you can do whatever. It's kind of like prostitution, except you're getting screwed for 9 months. And so what you have here is a situation, you go back to this couple. They have harvested the different reproductive materials necessary. They give them to this woman in Nebraska to have the child, right? She's got other kids at home, and now she's having a baby that's not related to anybody. She gives birth to the baby, okay? The baby is not related to her. It's, partially related to maybe one of the men in this couple. The baby never will know who their mother is.
That's right.
And then in a lot of states, what happens is the birth mother becomes the mother of record, and she then has to give the baby up for adoption, essentially, to these men who contracted her to have the baby.
And they don't do, and my understanding is, sorry to interject, but I know something about this because I have an adopted son, is actually to adopt to that. Those couples, quote unquote, homosexual couples, they don't go through any home site. Like, it's hard to adopt. We have adopted, and I've also been into certified by foster care in DC, and we could do a whole show on that. That is crazy. I'll tell you what, they didn't want to give us a child because we're the wrong color. Oops, that's
Right,
illegal, but they do
right,
it. That's what
right.
happens. But anyway, my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, like these homosexual couples, men or women for that matter, they don't go through any home study. A home study is
Right.
rigorous. They like scrub
It
you
takes
up and
months and months.
down and everything, but they don't go through anything and they give them a child. What the heck?
Right, because with surrogacy, you don't have to go through anything at all, and it becomes a private adoption. So now you have this child, and oftentimes it'll be more than one embryo is implanted, to get more bang for your buck. And so, you have this child who has been ripped from the only mother that they've ever known, is sent back off to France, never will know who their real mother is, and something that Katie Faust said, who works in this area a lot, is she said that a child has a right to know both of their parents. And you
Right.
think about that, and it's like, if you have adopted kids, not every adopted child knows who their birth parents were or ever gets to meet them.
Right, right.
And that's something that adopted kids carry with them through their whole life. They think about it. It doesn't go away. The
Right.
feeling, the feelings I have about my parents having gotten divorced at 10 months old, like, I'm 50 years old. I still think about that. I still think about what it would have been like to grow up with both my parents. I had a friend who was a social worker, and she was dealing with a kid whose parents got divorced, within the past few years of the therapy they were doing. And she said, Libby, when did you stop hoping that your parents would get back together? And I was like, well, I mean, in reality, never. In reality, you never stop hoping that, even though that's crazy, and they both have totally different lives or whatever. But imagine being a surrogate kid, and you just have no idea. Do they look like me? Would they love me? Why did they let this happen to me? Why won't they come rescue me? Kids have all kinds of ideas about their parents,
Right.
and they should get to know who they are. And just in terms of surrogacy, there should be laws against the manufacture of motherless orphans that should not be permissible
I
in our
agree.
society.
Yeah.
I mean, we should care so much more for kids, whether
You're
it's
right.
teaching them that marriage matters in their life, that aspiring to a loving relationship is a good thing, that their sex experiences and organs and, reproductive material, that this is not something to throw away.
Right.
Babies are not something to be murdered, like there's, and it's crazy because it seems like there's just so many amazing opportunities for joy and love in God's grace. And we we just pretend it's not worth anything, you know?
Yeah,
It's
it's true. Well,
crazy.
it is. So that's a self-centered viewpoint. This idea, even the idea that, two men or two women will adopt children. You're right. It's self-centered. Like, oh, I'd like a child. Oh, look, I'm happy now. Oh, I have a child. Well, how about the child? And I've followed some people. I'm sorry, the name's not top of mind. Who are in that situation, and they very much. That's not a good thing. Like you said, they want to know who their parents are. If they found out their mom, was some was they were produced by surrogacy, well, who's the mom? Who's the dad? Some guy who gave sperm to X many people. It's not right. It's not
No.
centered on the children's welfare, is what you're saying, really,
Yeah, no, it's not. And I think teaching kids like have condoms and abortions, that's not centered on anything good for children either, you know? I mean, it's really sort of devastating, and sometimes it's just the problem is so big. And maybe that's why you're tackling this portion of it. You're like, I can do this. I can tackle abstinence. I can do this, you
Well,
know?
I think so. That's one thing. I mean, well, we could jump into something else, and maybe we have a few minutes, like cohabitation. But, right. Well, I see it like so. This is a generational cycle. We're talking about like we're saying, like the youth we've worked with, the one young lady I'm thinking of, that, she was saying, oh, I don't have that example. Oh, I think I'll try that. It's like a generational thing. Her parents aren't married. Maybe your grandparents aren't married. In Southeast DC, probably most people, not great majority, aren't married, over 75%. So how do we break the cycle? I mean, without education, I don't see how it can be done. So at least a really good step is the absence thing. So sure, not everybody will follow it, but I mean, when I talk to parents, virtually everyone says the same thing. I says, oh, hey, did you hear about a program? Give them a brochure or something. Oh gosh, I wish I had that when I was growing up. So at least, we can start there, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like, pick the thing you can do and then do that thing.
Yeah, so we have like a chapter model for urban life training, meaning people in different areas can form a chapter, and it's like autonomous under the national organization. So any listeners who are interested could go to our site, urbanlifetraining.org, and click on chapters, and you can apply to be a chapter. And then on our website membership area, we have all our materials and everything. And there are many materials there. Also, you can just check out, without being a member too. So that's a possibility. Or you can join there if you like to support the mission we're doing. You can become a member, and that'll really help. And then the unionstation.love is really good, I think, for moving toward God-centered marriages and all or enhancing your marriage too. So I've been writing some and having some shows on cohabitation. But anyway, people who are otherwise educated seem to be ignorant about cohabitation. Like one of the guys, he's at University of Virginia, I think, maybe Wilcox, but he does a lot of studies on marriage. And he's saying like his students there, like college students, like they're like ignorant about this, even though they're smart college students, whatever. They don't seem to understand, cohabitation statistically. And of course, for a lot of other reasons, isn't a good idea. But yet, it's become so common. Do you have any thoughts on that?
On cohabitation,
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I definitely have seen the studies that it does not lead to successful marriages, and that makes a certain amount of sense. I lived with my husband before we got married for, I guess, a year before we were engaged, and then there was like a whole issue where my family was like, "No, you can't get married right now," and I was like, "Okay." It was a whole thing. But we lasted 20 years before our marriage disintegrated, for various tragic reasons. But Yeah, I don't know that anyone is out there right now saying to kids, this is a path forward for a successful family life. Certainly no one is telling kids a successful family life is something to strive for. You know, that's definitely been pushed off the table. So, telling them how to do a thing that they don't even know is important. That's a tough sell, you know, and I think that's probably why so many people focus on, you know, pro-life instead. They're like, okay, if you're doing a whole bunch of stuff that's messing up your life, just don't kill your baby, you know, just don't do that. Everything else is going to get screwed up. We can't fix that. But I think it makes sense to let people know first that having a strong family is something to strive for. You know, one of the things that I've told my son over the years, and he's 15, he's a kid. You know, I pray for his future to be good, you know. But I, you know, over the years, things I've taught him about relationships, I've said, and me and his dad get along really well. So he sees that. You know, and I think that's important that he sees that, but whatever, that's separate. But one of the things that I've said to him is when you grow up and you fall in love with the woman and she falls in love with you and you're good and kind to her and she's good and kind to you and you decide to get married and have children, like I put that whole thing in there, not just when you grow up and get married. I put like the whole thing in. You know, because I want to set the expectation of what that relationship can look like. It's not just that you love each other. You have to love each other, but that's not the only part. You can love someone who's not good and kind to you. You can love someone that you're not good and kind to, but you have to have that element as well if you're going to have a successful relationship and get married and do all of the wonderful things that God laid out for us to do, you know, have families and go on road trips and like do all the
That's
things God
right.
wants, you know.
That's beautiful.
But
Yeah.
I think you have to put this expectation out there early. And then you start to wonder, like you're doing, you start to wonder about the public schools. The public schools have decided that separation of church and state and freedom of religion means freedom from religion.
Yeah,
You
that's the
know,
problem.
and that's a problem. When I was a kid, we had a moment of prayer at the beginning. We had like a moment of silence in the at the beginning of the day, and that eventually went away because you're not allowed to have prayer in schools. You're not even allowed to, you know, me and my Hindu friend Eva at the time, like you, we weren't allowed to both sit there quietly and pray for a minute each, you know, at the beginning of the school day. They took that away. But what educators don't realize, or maybe they do when they're in favor of it, is that by removing a universal moral framework, you are opening the way to just destroy kids' lives. Like kids need boundaries and expectations.
That's right.
You know, I mean, you need to know what's expected of you. This is something that I think of even in a workplace, like I can do my job, but I can't meet your expectations, never mind exceed them, if I don't know what they are. You know, what is it you want from me? Do you want us to be turning out 30 articles a day, or do you want two of them that just go mega viral? Like, what is it that you're looking for? You know? And I think that's something that anyone with a job can relate to. I can do the thing you want, boss, person who signs my paycheck, but what is it? And even more important are the expectations that you set for yourself. This is another thing I talked to my son about. You know, he'll be like, oh, I got a B. And I'm like, okay, like, do you think you could have done better? Or is a B, did you really try hard? What's your expectation here? That's more important than mine at this point. You know, I've been trying to like set expectations this whole time. But how are kids supposed to know? Just going back to that woman I talked to at YWLS a few years ago, how are you supposed to know how to better your soul and how to exist in the world if the framework, if you're not even told that there's a framework, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's a really important topic. The freedom of religion versus freedom from this total, well, I think you could call it the agenda of the, of, I don't know, godless people, or call them what you will, you know, about that, that, you know, it's a, it's not, that was never the intention. The only intention in the Constitution is not to establish a state religion. Never was intended to say that. I mean, like, yes, so maybe we do have that problem, or we do, where there's too many godless people running around. But that, like, you know, as the founders say, you know, we have to have a moral framework and character, or the nation disintegrates.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for all your time today. And yeah, we could definitely talk more about topics like that, you know, in the future. But and I hope we can keep the conversation going.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciate you having me on, Richard. It's great.
Okay. Well, thanks. Do join us next time for the Rich Urban Show. We thank you so much for joining, and God bless. And we will see you next time.